Good morning, members. Apologize for the late start. Representative Cornish, you want to move the minutes of April 7th?
So moved, yes.
Discussion of the minutes of April 7th. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Cornish. Members, we have a letter from that's been forwarded to Chair Torkelson in the Capital Investment Committee. It's all of the capital investment bills that are referred to this committee. It's a letter signed by Representative Hansen and I. Representative Hansen, to that point, there's an asterisk by one project. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I wanted to disclose on Representative David's bill that the trail that would be proposed there would run adjacent to property I own in Fillmore County.
Thank you. Any questions on the letter? It doesn't need any action by the committee, but it's been forwarded to Representative Torkelson, and I assume Lead Houseman will get a copy of that letter, too. If it hasn't been sent, we'll make sure you get a copy. Any discussion? Okay. So rather than hear all these bills, members, we're just forwarding them on. Representative Torkelson's got a lot of time. He can consider how to deal with it. Members, next we have House File 3890. I'd like to move House File 3890. That's our omnibus finance bill, this year's rendition. It's a nice, sweet, short bill. And I have the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Any discussion to the DE2? And then after we adopt it, Ms. Taylor will walk through the bill. So first, let's adopt the DE2. See no discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The DE2 is adopted. Members, I'm going to do one more. Ms. Taylor, you better walk us through this A7. It's a technical amendment. I move the A7. Ms. Taylor, tell us what these number switches are about. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, the A7 amendment corrects some roll-up numbers. If you look later, you'll see in the bill, there's two sections for the legislature and the administration that were incorrectly rolled up into the DNR total, so that would correct that. And then line 1.5 of the amendment just clarifies but that both the fiscal years would be up to amounts, and I can point that out when we go through the bill.
And Ms. Taylor, for the record, you're the word lady. You put in all the words. You don't do the numbers, so it wasn't your addition there. You don't have to comment to that. All those in favor of the A7 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A7 is adopted. Actually, Mr. Hagemeyer does a terrific job for us as our fiscal analyst. So. Anyway, Ms. Taylor, why don't you walk through the bill as amended? I think what we'll do, members, is if there are questions, as why don't we let her walk through the whole thing and then just raise your hand and we'll take your hands in order. We'll let her walk through the whole bill and then we'll take questions after she's walked through it. Ms. Taylor.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, page one is just that section one is just technical, and then section two includes the totals for DNR that have been corrected now with the A7. Page two, you'll see the first rider starting on line 2.8 through 2.14. This provides $225,000 for some water appropriation monitoring, modeling, and reporting related to the Cold Spring Creek area, and you'll see language further on in the bill about that. Subdivision 3 starting on line 2.15, this would put in a $1.5 million reduction from the general fund and then backfill it with $1.5 million from the forest management investment account, and this is for DNR forestry. And then you'll see starting on line 2.25 through 2.31, there's some designations of $3,000 for a report regarding the Sand Dune State Forest, and another $3,000 for a report for the prescribed burning. And there's language later on in the bill for that. Subdivision 4 that continues on to page 3 provides $2.3 million from the Natural Resources Fund for state parks. Subdivision 5 is enforcement. You'll see $670,000 starting on 3.5, and this is from the governor's budget, providing DNR money for a helicopter. 3.8 through 3.12 provides $50,000 related to the carbon monoxide requirements under Sophia's law. Subdivision 6 provides $1.742 million and $3.658 million to DNR for legal costs related to PolyMet, and then you'll see starting on 3.17 up to 143, and then with the amendment up to $1.289 million would be available for transfer to other agencies. Section 3 would provide $25,000 for the Aggregate Resources Task Force, and there's language later on the bill that establishes that. Section 4 provides $250,000 from the State Forest Expense Account for the School Trust Lands Director to facilitate land development projects on school trust lands. And then we'll start on Article 2. This is some statutory and other language. Section 1 is the wild rice permit exemption for tribal members that we heard as part of the policy bill. Sections 2, 3, 4, and 5 are from Sophia's law. These are virtually identical to how we saw the bill when it was in committee. There were some changes to effective dates to speed up some of the enactment, and then also you'll see on line 5.32 it was originally boats 19 feet or greater, and now it is now 21 feet and greater. And then on page 6, section 6 is from the chair's prescribed burning language, and the language is as you saw it on last in the policy bill, and that's section 6 and 7. Section 8 is a provision that extends the Mineral Coordinating Commission by 10 years. And then section 9 is one of the first sections from O'Driscoll's bill. This is the quarterly distributions from the Minerals Management Account, and that was as it was heard in committee. As is section 10, this is part of the expedited exchange of school trust lands. That's sections 10. 11 and 12, and those are all as they were heard last in committee. Section 13 is a new section. This amends last year's law regarding that required the school trust lands director and the DNR to identify and sell a certain amount of land. This would expand it to exchanges and also provide some flexibility, allowing the DNR to sell land bordering public water without further legislative approval. That also require 10% of the proceeds to be used for BWC area work for the land exchange and sale. Section 4 is the section that establishes the Aggregate Resources Task Force. This would be an 8-member task force made up of 4 representatives and 4 senators, and then you'll see on lines 10.8 through 10.15 the duties, and then there's a reporting requirement, and then on subdivision 4 on 10.20 the task force would expire shortly after the report was completed. Section 15 is another section from Sophia's law. Section 16 is the reporting requirement related to the prescribed burn, and this is as it was heard in committee. Section 17 is the Sand Dune State Forest provision that we heard earlier. This is virtually identical to what we heard in committee, but you'll notice on 11.20 and 11.22, it was specified that the Division of Forestry would be preparing the report, and it would be pertaining to their progress. Section 18 is a new section. This would require the DNR to modify certain permits of the Cold Spring Creek area to address that situation. And these would be an interim permits not to exceed 5 years. You'll see on 12.1. And then it requires under paragraph B starting on 12.4 the DNR to do some monitoring and submit annual progress reports. Section 19 is another section from Sophia's law. Section 20 is a repealer of the Minnesota Future Resources Fund, a fund that no longer receives revenue. And it's has a delayed effective date. And I should have pointed out when I was going through, there was an appropriation for the Aggregate Resources Task Force from that account. And then any other remaining funds you'll see would be canceled to the general fund.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ms. Taylor, I might have missed it, but did you note that in Sophia's Law we did, there's a change in there, it's 22 feet, not the 19 that was in the bill as the way it was heard. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, I did, and we have it at 21 feet currently.
21. Excuse me. Sorry about that. 21 feet. Discussion to the bill before we begin to take testimony. I was going to say one thing. I believe that A8 is not going to be offered. I don't know if there's anyone here about the A8, but at this time, I don't believe anyone's going to be offering the A8 amendment. Just an FYI for it. Deals with the 50 cents on the deer hunting license. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe, you know, we have a number of accounts here. There's always a lot of accounts in DNR, and I wanted to see if Mr. Hagermeyer had maybe a rough ballpark of what's remaining, particularly in the game and fish one after, and the state parks after those appropriations, if he's able to do that, or maybe that's something that can come there.
Well, Representative Hansen, I think specifically it wouldn't be bad if he has an overriding number for the game and fish and for the parks account, but why don't we, I know the commissioner's here to testify, how about if we bring him down and before we start with amendments, Mr. Hagemeyer, maybe you could touch on a few of those main ones and maybe including forestry one. And why don't I give you a little time, I think we'll bring the commissioner down first. Commissioner Landwehr, if you want to come down. Do you want? I don't know if you want to bring Ms. Hulick with, or are you going to just run by yourself for a little while? Welcome, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tom Landwehr, Department of Natural Resources Commissioner. And when the tough questions come, I will bring Ms. Hulick down. So.
Welcome. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. And first off, let me just say thank you for the consideration for four of our priorities here. You fully fund the North Met legal fund. We appreciate that. You help us fill the gap with the helicopter purchase that we completed this year. That is very helpful. We're all very supportive of Sophia's Law as well, and appreciate the support of that, as well as the wild rice policy change, which is a minor thing but important to some people. So thank you for that. Those are all appreciated. We have two concerns with the current proposal, Mr. Chairman, members. First relates to the level of funding for parks and trails and the source of funds that we are receiving there. And the second is with respect to the level of funding for forestry, or rather the source of funds that is going into that. Mr. Chairman, members, if I could, I'd provide a little bit of detail on that. With respect to parks and trails, we are experiencing some serious budget shortfalls there, and while this certainly helps, the funding certainly helps, it creates some challenges for us going into this calendar year, specifically to provide assistance to park visitors and in particular to deal with ongoing trail maintenance needs. The proposed $2.3 million comes from the state parks account. So none of that funding can be used for trails maintenance, and that's a problem for us, as well as the fact that it's not does not fund some of the personnel needs we have. We have done a lot over the last few years to increase the efficiency. We're looking of the state park system. We're looking at doing more under our system plans, but even so, we will be looking at some serious staff reductions. The system plan, I think people have heard about that, but just a short note on that, if I could, Mr. Chairman. System plan is our attempt to look at the statewide inventory of parks, trails, state recreation areas, public water accesses, and adjust the operations at those facilities in order to meet really the needs of the future going forward and to increase our efficiencies. We developed that plan in 2015. We've begun implementing some components of that, most notably this last year we went to 100% reservable at a state park campgrounds. That makes it more efficient for people to reserve a campground prior to leaving their house, but also it reduces the need that we have for contact station staff because people know they have a reserved campsite. The challenge is that when people come to those campgrounds now, we still have to provide signage and in some cases information kiosks or even places where they can register so that we can reduce the number of staff that are there, but then still have the amenities that people need to do their full registration. Mentioned that some of the challenges with the state park fund is that it cannot be used for state trails. We have in the last 15 years we've grown the state trail system by 40%, but we have 60% fewer dollars today to maintain those trails as we had at that time 15 years ago. Our costs to maintain a trail system about $1,700 a mile, excuse me, about $2,800 per mile per year. We currently are getting about $1,700 per mile per year. So we're not able to keep up with the maintenance need on those trails, and we're experiencing some real challenges with some of those trails that are becoming very, very broken up. So, Mr. Chairman, members, that's our concern with the parks funding. The dollar amount is low, and the source of funding does not allow us to take care of the trail system. Mr. Chairman, members, just a little bit on the forestry funding. The proposal uses FMIA, Forest Management Investment Account, to fund some of the operations of the division. Historically, FMIA account is used, according to statute, for reforestation, timber stand improvement, timber sales administration, forest road maintenance. It's those real sort of on-the-ground activities that we need to do to manage the state's many million acres of state forest. The Forest Management Investment Account is funded by sales of timber, and so it's a very highly variable account. When timber sales are strong, a lot of money goes in. When timber sales are weak, like they were in the late 2000s, not much money goes into that. So it's not a very dependable source of funding, but more specifically, it is used for those activities on the ground that are very critical for our forest management. Some of the needs that we have for forestry right now include things like forest inventory. When we talk to our mills and they're wondering what we can provide for timber, we have to have a good sense of what is available out there. We also work very diligently with other divisions in the within the department to make sure that we're managing in a very sustainable manner, and some of the activities that we require to do with that coordination, taking care of endangered species and so on, cannot be used from the Forest Management Investment Account, and that's what the we will be falling short of with this reallocation. And finally, Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of reports that are required here, one with respect to the management of Sand Dunes State Forest and one with respect to prescribed fire, and the funding would not be available to do those reports, and we're concerned about that that shortfall. Mr. Chairman, members, with that, that's a short summary of the proposal in front of you. Again, we appreciate the support for the four activities that are taken care of there. We just have some concerns about the two elements that are still a little short.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, I did have one question. In your, I believe this would be your seventh budget here before us, in those 7 years, how many times have you been back to get a supplemental for parks and trails?
Mr. Chairman, I would guess probably three.
Okay. And that means you were... I just want to remind members that we fully funded your request last year, and we are funding $2.3 million more from the parks account above and beyond your fully funded request last year. So I think, Commissioner, for you to talk about the changes that you need to take and move forward in a positive way. I will say the troubling thing for me is I see and hear that attendance is up. In one case, in the daily, 10 or 20%, the other 1% relates to the overnight stay. So one of them's up 10%, one's up 20, and the more people that come, the more money you lose. So I think you need to take a deep breath, evaluate your model and how it's working and what are you doing wrong. You're doing something, right? You're attracting people to come to the parks, and that's great news. But it's troubling when you've created a model that the more people that come, the more money you lose. I don't want to think that that means something that we should do that we don't want to do. So thank you for being here. We have a few questions. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, Commissioner. Maybe this is Ms. Rivers' question, but how many people are we talking about? You mentioned cuts. Are we talking about laying off staff out in the field, or what does that actually mean if the trail maintenance is not is unable to access the parks fund?
Mr. Landwehr.
Yeah, members, the total FTE element that is not funded here is about 20 to 25 FTEs, but since most of our staff in the parks and trails system in particular are seasonal, that translates to about 100 parks and trails staff, so it's a significant number.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and does that mean you'd have to close some trails that are no longer usable, or are there trails that are in a condition where the lack of maintenance is meaning that you really can't have the public using them?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman and members, we would not close trails. We've got some that are very challenging to ride. The Sakata Trail I often hear about, but it would just mean continued deference of maintenance on those trails and not mowing the grass on the side, for instance, not sweeping the leaves and the branches off, not doing the simple patching. It's primarily just the maintenance of those trails that would suffer.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner, is there any evidence when there's a delay or a lack of maintenance that affects tourism, that fewer people use the trails when they're not maintained, or if it's a bumpy ride?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm not aware that we've done surveys to identify that. We certainly, as I mentioned, the Sakata Trail, we certainly hear from people saying, I'm not going to use that trail anymore because it's too hard on my bike, and I suspect there may be other cases where that happens. I don't know that we've sort of comprehensively looked at what impact that has on overall use in tourism.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, for being here today. When we're talking about trail maintenance, one of the questions I have is how that applies to trail maintenance throughout the winter. We've got some trails through our district where that's been kind of rubbed this past year with snow removal. We have a lot of people using it year-round. How would that impact that situation?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members, it gets a little confusing at times when we separate out the system plan, which calls for implementing efficiencies to address the actual need versus budget shortfalls. And some of what we're seeing right now in reduced plowing, for instance, is, in fact, in response to our system plan. We are intending to reduce maintenance in areas where the use does not meet the level of investment. And as an example, we have determined that there are some cross-country ski trails that get very modest use and yet are still very expensive to maintain. And it is our preference to not spend the money on that, rather to use the money in areas where we have higher needs. And so people will see, as we begin the system plan implementation, a change in some of the services we're providing because it simply doesn't make sense. I'll use another example. We have one state park facility where it costs $40 to the state for every time a person comes in the door. I would be better off handing out $20 bills at the gate and telling them to go somewhere else. And so while we're not running on a absolute return on investment policy, we certainly have to recognize the overall needs of the system and reduce operations in some places so we can support it in others. Having said that, the dollars that we're looking at are simply to maintain the levels that we've got right now. So what we experienced last winter would not be addressed with the proposal you've got in front of you if it's a budget shortfall.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still a little confused on what I'm thinking of is the Gateway Trail situation, where last year the DNR wasn't able to do it and then worked out with the communities to take care of that. So was that a system plan or was that a shortfall?
Mr. Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members, that was a system plan implementation. We intended on reducing the plowing of the state trail. And at the same time, we're also looking at potentially partnering with another local community to help us do that. Worked with the county, Washington County, for instance, or one of the municipalities. We send a truck from Warner Road out to Stillwater to maintain part of that trail. It doesn't make sense when most of that trail is right next to a road and we could get a partner to do that. So we intended on reducing services there because plowing the trail in the winter was very expensive and we weren't certain that we were getting a good return on that investment. But at the same time, we're also looking at how we might do it differently and save the state some money.
Thank you. Commissioner Landwehr, I appreciate what you're saying about when we have trails or the case of the golf course down in Fort Ridgely, that it just doesn't make any economic sense when you've got, I can't remember if it was 20 memberships and you're spending $150,000 to maintain a golf course that almost nobody uses anymore. It's a nine hole. It doesn't make sense. But what amazes me is you don't sit down with the neighbors around the area that's affected and show them the numbers and say, you know, here's the deal. We're losing $150,000. Doesn't make sense to keep this golf course open anymore. We can't make sense about it. But tell them ahead of time that you're going to do that. Give them the time that maybe there's a local interest group that says, hey, let us run it. We'll take all the financial liability off your shoulders. And I think the same thing in the case of the trails. Instead of waiting until December to let people know, oh, we got caught with an early snowstorm. Seriously? In December, you got caught with an early snowstorm? Commissioner, that was October 31st in 1987 when we had an early snowstorm. A snowstorm in December is not early. That's not when you tell people, oh, we're not going to snowplow your trail. Seriously? This is not rocket science. This is just common sense. Representative Fabian, I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Mr. Chairman, members, absolutely, we need to do a better job of communication, and we're working on that.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Commissioner Landwehr. You know, one of the things that I have an ongoing concern about, we're going to approve a legacy bill again this year, and we're going to appropriate for more trails. Are we creating something that we can't manage?
Mr. Chairman, members,
Commissioner Landwehr,
I think history has proven that is the fact. We have increased the trails beyond our ability to manage them. As an example, I believe it was 2 years ago, the bonding bill, we requested $5 million for state trail creation. We got $18 million. So I think we're trying to propose trail corridors to the legislature that we think are reasonable and within our capacity to address, but sometimes we get more new trail development than we actually are asking for.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your candor. Thank you. Some of the other issues we've touched on here, Representative Fisher talked about it, Chair McNamara. You talk about the cost to maintain a trail system at about $1,700 per mile, and you've made some comments about cross-country ski trails and so forth, and I've raised this issue in the past. It would, you know, I've asked you and your staff for, I believe, 4 years to come up with some sort of system whereby we can make better use of volunteers, and I continue to be, I'll say, stonewalled by the agency on that. I've asked you a number of times on the Adopt a WMA program to come up with something that's more workable for volunteers. We had a number of situations in northwest Minnesota this past winter with the cross-country ski trails where people were more than willing to volunteer. You said that it costs about $40 for every time somebody comes into some of these facilities. You'd be better off handing them a $20 bill. Quite frankly, Commissioner, I think you'd be better off using volunteers, and I think that there is a very, very strong appetite out there for people to volunteer. But I challenge you and your agency to come up with something. We spent 5 or 6 weeks this winter, and every week I got a different answer about why we can't use volunteers. Even some DNR employees to groom the snowmobile trails, and they were going to do it on their own. I think that your bureaucracy is so large that it's difficult to work with these things. So explain to me what the issues are that prohibit you and the agency from enlisting more volunteers. I'm an adult. Lots of people are. Why can't I sign off on a waiver of liability and go to work on some of these things?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to give you my limited understanding of that, but I'm going to call Deputy Director Cheryl Leversedge up as well. My understanding, Representative Fabian and members, is that, well, first off, we do use a lot of volunteers. We have a lot of friends group, and they do a lot of great things for us. The challenge becomes when we start talking about using especially power equipment and the liability insurance requirements that the state has. These are not departmental policies. These are state policies. That are out there that are tough for volunteers to meet. And I think it's fair to say we are trying to figure out how we can work within that system or propose changes that would allow us to better use volunteers. But my understanding is, for the most part, the hurdle we've got relates to liability insurance. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, defer to Mr. Leversedge on that.
Deputy Director, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Deputy Director Phil Leversedge with the Division of Parks and Trails.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian and members, we did have obstacles in front of us last winter trying to come up with a way to use volunteers. There were three primary areas. We were trying to reduce our obligation for use of state equipment, so we were looking at trying to partner with groups that would use their own equipment to provide local ski grooming. The two insurance obstacles that we had were that some of the organized groups were not able to provide liability insurance because they aren't registered nonprofits. We tried to work with the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota to be a blanket provider for that insurance, that liability insurance coverage. And their insurance carrier raised a concern about the potential liability for workers' compensation for volunteers based on a statute that says that volunteers working for the Commissioner of Natural Resources are covered for workers' compensation. Their interpretation was that, by extension, volunteers working through the nonprofit groups would also be liable for workers' compensation coverage, which they did not provide for their volunteers. We've since got a legal opinion that says that our partnerships with nonprofit organizations do not put their volunteers under that statutory requirement for workers' compensation coverage. So we believe we've resolved that, but the two insurance issues were general liability for groups that are not formally organized and workers' compensation for groups that have been.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Leversedge, I appreciate that. We started having this discussion the first week of the session, basically. So I'm asking you, what statutory changes have you brought forth that will help us get through these issues?
Director Leversedge.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, we have a white paper that we've put that outlines those, and I believe that was provided to the committee just this week. No, I can talk to you directly on that. We aren't sure whether there are statutory changes or if it is just a legal opinion that we need to provide for our partner groups. The other area that is of a concern to us is around the workers' compensation issue for volunteers and your concern, Mr. Fabian, Representative Fabian, about allowing people to provide a waiver of that liability. We don't believe that statute allows that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to that point then, again, are you going to be proposing some statutory changes before the end of session so that we can let some of these people with a lot of common sense do some of this work for the betterment of the park system?
Commissioner, Director, just an FYI, we have not seen that white paper yet, so if you could get it to us, that'd be helpful. If there's some legislation you need to help implement this, we still have time this year to make it happen. Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members, I was unaware of the white paper. We will make sure you get the white paper, but we will also work with staff here to address some language.
And Commissioner Landwehr, I just think, again, it's important to be proactive. Director, realize I get that it costs a lot to do different things. But truthfully, the most expensive equipment we have on state trails are groom and snowmobile trails. And you know what? They're done with volunteer organizations, and they figured out a way for them to be operating $250,000 pieces of equipment to groom these snowmobile trails. You figured out how to do that efficiently without DNR people. And there's snowmobile clubs across Minnesota working to do this. And I know some of these guys run this equipment for $10 an hour or whatever they're doing. They figured out a way. Now you're talking about grooming cross-country ski trails, and I come to find out they're groomed with a snowmobile. Well, I think we have a lot of people that have a snowmobile that may be willing to work through this. You guys just need to figure this out, and if we need to help you create some language, understand that today we've created a bureaucracy that our insurance, everybody at this table, including both of you and half the people in the audience, costs the state of Minnesota $20,000 a year to supply. The insurance my wife and I get costs $20,000 a year. Well, if we can utilize some volunteers, they're less expensive, and we need less full-time volunteers. That's the reality of the system we have today. So this is not rocket science. It's not. But don't react after the fact always, and you're always going from one fire to the other, which reminds me, today we have no fires going on. Even if it's down in southwestern Minnesota, surrounded by black dirt, we can't burn a patch of grass because it might torch northeastern Minnesota. So sometimes we do stuff that makes no sense to some of us. So sorry to get off there, but Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see you've got a long list. I'll sit back and listen. Thank you.
Commissioner Landwehr, or Director, any comments?
Mr. Chairman, members, our snowmobile trail system is a very mature system, and most of the clubs, all of the clubs that receive state dollars have that insurance. So it's a very good model to follow, I agree. We don't have the maturity in the system yet for cross-country ski trails, but this is the right time to start, Mr. Chairman, to your point.
Well, Commissioner Landwehr, if you're going to try and convince me that cross-country skiing is a new thing on the books and we're just beginning to do it, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just real quickly, Commissioner, I'd be interested to know, with the appropriations that have happened in the past, either through bonding or legacy or in this committee, do you have plans to develop more trails this season?
Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members, we still have a substantial part of the $18 million that was provided 2 years ago that is unspent. So we are working on those trail segments that the legislature has appropriated funds for us for, and assuming some of those will move forward. I'm assuming some of those would move forward.
Commissioner Landwehr, to this point, and this is, I actually have a bill. I think we need to realize that people riding bicycles don't pay anything. We're talking about the cross-country skiers, and you're trying to balance. They actually have a fee. They pay a fee, and you got to balance the fund, and I get the fund doesn't quite, you know, balance. And the snowmobilers that use the Paul Bunyan Trail, the one I ride my bike on, I jump on my bike and go take it. I don't pay anything. Representative Hackbarth jumps on his snowmobile. He's got to have a sticker. The CO is going to stop him and ticket him. Why do I get to ride his trail for free? I think that's part of the problem here. We've got all kinds of people that don't pay directly for the use, and I think an honest conversation is, should they be helping pay for the maintenance? You're talking about sweeping the trail and mowing the grass along the edge and all that. Most of that activity is done for the bicyclers and not for the snowmobile who are actually paying part of it. And I actually like trails, and I want to be careful that we don't just stop completely taking care of them and building them, but I think a deep breath at this point in time, we went wild on building them and we didn't properly prepare, and that's not only your fault, it's the legislature's fault for not addressing that, and I hope we can do that going forward. It's a serious conversation that needs to take place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and we've already committed to looking at the cross-country ski trail pass, because I don't think anybody's taken a good look at that for a long time, but I think it's a great point, and it's one we will be working on, is figuring out how to do a better job of securing funds to the trail maintenance that is needed.
Representative Hausman, is it to this point?
To this point,
yeah,
yes.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thanks. In defense of the department, I think we need to be clear that virtually all of the energy around trail development comes from local communities. They work in their communities for years. Sometimes they're impatient with us. But literally, all the organizing around this system comes from people who live in those communities, and they do a lot of work before they get to this point. So I think we just need to remember the motivation for that is not coming from them, but from the people of Minnesota.
Thank you. And I've got a list, I think about seven members, and I don't have any problem. We're all going to be here tomorrow, so if we need to come back tonight, we certainly can. But I think we can get through the list, and then the amendments I don't think will necessarily take all that long. So I don't want to squash any conversation because we do have the commissioner
Mr.
here.
Mr. Chair, to Representative Hausman's point, if I may.
Oh, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Hausman's point, then, I think that as we move forward, communities need to be realistic about what the expectations are. You know, if they come down here and they got all these plans for these trails, I think then that they have to be willing then to be a partner and take over the maintenance of these trails. If the state is going to come in with money and so forth, I think, Representative Hausman, that's a realistic, and in light of what we're hearing here today and we have been hearing, if communities are going to make requests, they have to be willing to step up to the table and maintain those trails into the future. So I'm willing to have that discussion with you.
Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, I heard that discussion was already happening. They're willing to do that. It was just the issue of insurance, and I even thought I heard you've sort of resolved that issue. So it sounds as though that's the very conversation that's been ongoing and that probably has a resolution.
And Representative Hausman, in the case of the cross-country ski trails, it seems like they are working through that, and we have a possible solution. Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, one of the things I haven't mentioned about a system plan also looked at what a state trail system would look like, both in terms of what the state would own and manage, what the state might own, but what partners would manage, partners being primarily local units of government, or what the partners might own and manage, so that we can have a comprehensive network of trails and the obligations are identified right up front. We've never had that in the past, and so we've kind of developed, I don't want to say willy-nilly, but we've developed without a plan of where we're going to end up. Now we have that plan, so I think that gives us much more clarity about what our obligations are going to be in the future.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like just to go rewind a little bit to a couple of comments that were made. First of all, I want to echo your comments about the golf course at Fort Ridgely and just kind of make public that I do wish the citizens had been heard better before the decision was made. I am glad there's a meeting tonight, and of course that meeting I think everybody fully expects that DNR staff will listen very closely to a group of people that have a strong strong interest in that, in the park and the golf course, and thank you for having the meeting tonight. But I want to also rewind to your initial comments. You mentioned the Cicada Trail. And members, I want you to know the Cicada Trail goes from Mankato to Faribault. It's heavily used by walkers, bikers, snowmobilers, skiers. It's a very active trail. I'm sure right now there's people walking and biking on that trail today. And you reference that as if I want to put that in the context specifically as a good example. You identified that as an example as relates to this bill or the DE amendment that we're looking at. What is the specific impact of this? If we take this approach, what is the impact on the very critically needed repairs on that trail? Again, bikes, a lot of people can't bike it anymore because if you have a lighter bike, it's just not going to survive the potholes. So.
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, there are two issues with the Cicada Trail. One is the day-to-day maintenance of the trail. Our request for operational funding is for that day-to-day maintenance, which would be the mowing, the sweeping, the crack sealing, and things like that. The asset preservation need of reconditioning and rebuilding the trail completely is part of our bonding request for asset preservation.
And Director Leverage, what was in the $3 million in general fund? Was it $400,000 or Commissioner Landwehr that was for trails maintenance?
Mr. Chair, in our request it was $400,000 that we identified as to help us catch up on trail maintenance. The other part of our overall request is that the compensation request and then our other costs that go up, cost of doing business, includes on our trail operation side. It's for the entire division.
So some of that cost is also incorporated in that the 4.1 base request.
Okay, I was just talking about, because that base includes some of that got funded out of the what's in our bill, the $2.3 million. So of the other $3 million in general fund, $400,000 was specifically for trail maintenance. Then of the other $2.6 general fund, is some of that for the trail division and some for parks division?
Mr. Chair, we're trying to fully integrate our division so that we don't really identify every single position as park or trail. But, for example, that helps cover the compensation cost of our area trail managers. Their compensation is going to increase regardless of whether we get additional funding or not. We're going to have to cover that cost out of our existing funds. So to that degree, some of the $4.1 million that we identified as being needed for maintaining our current level is included in that 2.6 additional.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just again want to follow up. Now I'm feeling a double whammy, to be real honest with you. First of all, for the maintenance of the Sakata Trail, understand this is heavily wooded, and so the sweeping is relevant, and I hear about sealing. Again, the cracks go on the ceiling. So this is an ongoing challenge, and also, members, I want you to understand, this is maybe a good case study to understand, because the Sakata Trail, which is a state trail, connects to a well-established system of trails supported by the City of Mankato and the City of North Mankato that extend throughout that region, and so this is a fairly large project and integral to kind of how we live in our area. We take a lot of pride. We run a... It's a tourism aspect. We run a river ride in the fall that attracts thousands of bicyclists from across the state. It goes on and on, is my point. But the double whammy I'm hearing is that when you talk about your bonding proposal, and I'm glad the bonding chair is here, just a reminder that there's a reminder that we need a robust bonding bill if we're going to do that as one other item, if we can expect to have that trail rebuilt. And so... I'm concerned about the Sakata Trail, both in terms of maintenance and then also repair. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to figure out if either Mr. Landemere or others can help us understand where the potential cuts, and it sounds like some of the parks and trails might actually close, or that you're not going to be able to maintain them or continue to have the service. Have you, I don't know if you had a chance to figure out where those are located. Do you have a priority list of where the layoffs would occur, where the parks would reduce service or cut back hours or actually close some trails? Is there a list that we can look at?
Director Leverage-Zetch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, the reductions would occur across our system. When Commissioner Landwehr mentioned 100 positions that would be affected, it would be largely 25% or more of our seasonal staff would see either reduced hours of work per week or more, in more cases, vastly shortened seasons, so that they would come to work later in the spring and go home earlier in the fall, so that we would see a reduction in that direct visitor service across our entire system.
Representative Clark.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you have to do some planning if we're going to do this. Can you put a list together that would start to help us understand where that actually happens? And so that's the first question. I have a second one.
Commissioner Landwehr, could you present that to the, what would happen if the $3 million general fund was not allocated? If you could just have your staff get that to us, that would be great.
Mr. Chair, we'll do
Representative
that.
Clark.
One, last question. So are most of the people that would be losing their jobs locally, local people who live in that area? Are they mostly local hired people?
Director Leverage, did you actually in any of your testimony say that someone would lose their job? I didn't hear that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, in our earlier testimony, and I think still today, it would be primarily vastly shortened seasons.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would like to know what that means.
Sure. Yeah. It's a good point. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, morning. You know, we see these escalating costs and everything else, and the typical trail profile, blacktop versus gravel. It seems to me over the years we've increased these trails with blacktopping, like the Paul Bunyan up around Walker going blacktop and so on and so forth. Have you ever done a study or whatever on the impetus or reason for blacktopping? It seems like that's just the standard nowadays. And obviously there's increased costs and maintenance, which is driving your deficit. But what about the value in terms of blacktop versus gravel? And then the fact that, you know, most of the people that, or a lot of people that use a blacktop are bicyclists that don't pay. Have you looked at a cost analysis of any of that?
Mr. Chairman, I might just give a couple thoughts and then turn it over to Mr. Leversedge. The when we talk about trails, I think we tend to focus on sort of one type of trail, but you're right. We have multiple types of trails. So we have, you know, paved trails, we have gravel trails, in some cases we have a bunch of walking trails, which are just mowed. Cross-country ski trails, snowmobile trails might just be mowed. They might not be graveled or blacktopped. And the recognizing the higher cost both of development and of maintenance of paved trails, I think we're very cautious to not pave a trail unless there's clearly an overriding reason. I think you've identified what that is. Once upon a time it was rollerbladers. We don't see that so much anymore, but I think it is clearly biking now tends to demand more paved trails. But I'm not sure of any analyses that are done. I might ask Mr. Leversedge analysis he's aware of.
Director Leversedge.
Mr. Chair, Representative Uglin, I don't believe that we've done a formal analysis of a detailed analysis of paved versus gravel surface trails. I do know anecdotally in many cases on gravel surface trails, there's a lot more day-to-day maintenance. Granted, the construction costs are much lower and the rehabilitation costs are much lower, but on the operational day-to-day maintenance, in order to keep a usable trail surface with dealing with erosion and with keeping potholes out of trails and things like that, we find that a paved trail is actually less costly on an operational day-to-day basis.
Representative Uglin, follow up. Well, I can believe that from a short-term perspective, but from a long-term perspective, when you're talking crack filling, sealing, and so on and so forth, you're treating the paved trails much like we do with MnDOT and transportation. And I guess I would just urge you to take a look at your costs and the value that those paved trails are bringing to, for instance, the bicycle community. And then I think the chairman was correct here in terms of user costs for the people that are driving the paved trail expansion in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't we just have Mr. Hagemeyer walk through a couple of those balances so we have some background information. Mr. Hagemeyer.
Yep. Mr. Chair, it might be easiest if I just go through the bill by each appropriation and tell you how much is in that account.
Go ahead.
On line 2.8, there's a $225,000 appropriation from the water management account. That account is anticipated to end the biennium, so June 30th of 2017, with a balance of $1,346,000 prior to that appropriation. On line 2.23, the appropriation on the FMIA, on June 30th of 2017, the anticipated balance is $6 million. The state parks account on line 3.1, the anticipated balance on June 30th of 2017 is $3,728,000. On line 3.5, the $670,000 from the Game and Fish Fund that would come out of the operations account, which is a primary account we use in the Game and Fish Fund. The balance is $7.7 million, but that one is in a downward trend. On line 3.8, the $50,000 out of the Water Recreation account has an ending balance of $826,000. And then on line 3.24, the Minnesota Future Resources Fund, that's the entire balance of the fund is $25,000 that's left in there, and it has no revenue source or really expenditures out of it anymore. So this would be the last expenditure out there in closing the account on the, I think it's section 20 repeals the account.
Thank you. Questions on that? So I thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. We tried to be very good stewards of the state's money, so when I come back next year, we'll have good money to start with when we do the supplemental. To that point, Representative Clark.
So this question, I think you referenced line 3.8. What is section 86B.532 that's...
Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, that would be...
You want
Ms. Taylor might be better to answer this one.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, the 86B.532 is the new carbon monoxide requirements under Sophia's law.
Thank you.
Representative Clark, is that good?
Yes. Yep.
Representative Hansen, to this point.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I was enjoying your optimism there about next year, and I did have a question for the commissioner on the forestry account and what that does, because it seems to be what we usually see is raids from different accounts, and even though there's money left in there. Could you maybe talk about what the impact is of taking money from the... And I don't know if I jumped ahead of anybody.
Well, here. You actually did, but he's already here, so let's let you cut in line. Director Bull, welcome to the committee, and did you hear Representative Hansen's question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Forrest Bull, Director of Forestry. And to Representative Hansen's question, the reduction in the general fund and focusing more on the forest management investment account, of course, reduces our flexibility, because with general fund, you can pay for a lot of the things the division does. With the forest management investment account, it's really those things that are identified around timber. So it's the reforestation efforts, it is forest roads, our timber management, our timber sales, all of those things. The reduction in general fund would have some impacts on more general forestry things like our forest health work around Emerald Ash Borer, our outreach efforts, just the general administration of operating the division, things like certification, all of those things. We use general fund to pay for all of those items.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Bowe, just on the Emerald Ash Borer, what would you not be doing if we take the dollars out of the general fund?
Director Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, having just seen the bill yesterday, we have not dove down into the details yet. It's really just a reduction of our flexibility in the general fund, and I can't speak exactly to the hours that would be reduced. Certainly a million five would be a number of hours across all of those programs that I previously talked about.
But Director Bowen, Representative Hansen, we're not cutting you one penny. We're actually shifting, and you have plenty of general funds still. I mean, it's a legitimate argument how much should be left in FMIA, but I want to reiterate that other than the $3 million of general fund to Parks and Trails, this fully funds Forestry Division above and beyond your requests. We actually put in our bill that passed the legislature and the governor signed last year was more than your division's request. So you actually have more money to you than what you asked for, which isn't a bad thing. I think our children and grandchildren sometimes like that when we give them more than they even asked for, but sometimes enough's enough. So thank you. I didn't mean that negatively. I actually really like you a lot. You know that. So I apologize if that sounded like I was going after you. Let's see. We've got Torkelson, Hornstein, Green, and Cornish. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for facing the music today. Appreciate your being here. I know it's not easy, but I would be remiss if I didn't backtrack to Fort Ridgely. I don't know how many state parks in the state of Minnesota have active friends groups, but I know that Fort Ridgely does. These are citizens from the area that care very much about the park. They collect dues. They meet regularly. And I just think that you need to work effectively with these folks. Approach them first so they don't have to read it in the newspaper, and work with them to work forward in a way that does the best thing for this park and other parks across the state. The support of our citizens in our efforts, whether it be as legislators or DNR commissioners, is critical to our success. And when we have an organized group like this that is out there fighting for their park, well, let's work with them to make sure that park is the best it can be.
Thank you.
To that point, Mr. Chair.
First, Commissioner Lamour.
Mr. Chairman, members, I can't tell you how wholeheartedly I agree with that. We are dependent upon the goodwill of our constituents, and when we stumble like this, it hurts us not only in the short term, it hurts us in the long term. And I am committed to improving communications in the department. I'm calling this the year of communications excellence, because as often as not, when we can talk with people, we can engage people before we do something, we end up in a much better place. And so I absolutely agree. I apologize for the shortcomings we've had with some rolling out some of these things, but I'm committed to try and improve that in the future.
Thank you. Let's see, Fabian. I knew there was something.
Thank you, Mr. Fabian. Just to that point, Representative Torkelson and Commissioner, earlier when Mr. Leversedge was up here, we talked a little bit about the snowmobile group being a nonprofit and so forth. I think one of the things that the agency should look at is if the Friends of the Parks can form a nonprofit, does that help out? And that's just an FYI for your staff to look into.
Thank you, and good point. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for being here, Mr. Commissioner. I want to echo a little of Representative Johnson's earlier comments about bonding, and it just led to a question I had that in terms of the shortfall on trail maintenance, which some of us here are concerned about. I think there's a bonding proposal for asset preservation, or asset preservation is included. Can you actually bond for trail maintenance if it comes down to that?
Commissioner Lambert.
Mr. Chairman, members, I believe that it depends on the type of trail maintenance. If we're actually doing sort of mill and overlay, that's bondable. I don't believe seal cracking is, but major renovation type things are bondable.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, we've got that bonding brain trust in the room with Representative Torkelson and Representative Hausman, and I guess maybe that is something that we ought to be looking at if there's a need here, which clearly there is.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I got a couple of questions, but because we were on trails, I'll start there first. You say you're falling short on your maintenance by a great deal. Have you ever considered putting out the maintenance to bidding to private entities?
Commissioner Lambert.
Mr. Chairman, members, we certainly do for the sort of construction type activities, but in terms of mowing or seal cracking, I don't believe we've looked into that.
Okay, maybe we can look into that. Mr. Chair. Maybe we can look into that and see if there would be a cost savings. The other question is that you had mentioned earlier that there's one facility where it's costing you $40 per person. And my question is, where is that facility, and is this unique, or is there more than one?
Commissioner Lambert.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm aware of two operations where we have a cost that approaches $40 per person. One of them is Hill Annex, and we're proposing to close that. The other is the Sudan Mine State Park, and it's the Sudan Mine tour proper that is that expensive. A very, very unique experience, but it's very, very expensive to maintain that hoist that takes people 2,700 feet down underground. So very, very expensive.
And Commissioner Lambert, to that point, Representative Green, I'm thinking of two of the most expensive things. You mentioned Hill Annex, and we've talked about the golf course at Fort Ridgely. Both of those we're proposing to change and close those operations are here to address those two biggest concerns. And you mentioned the uniqueness of the Sudan Mine and the additional challenges with the university leaving from there. Representative Green, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Would it be possible to get a list of the facilities in the programs you have that you do lose money on and where they're at?
That's right. Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Lambert.
We have pulled together a complete list of each operation, its revenues and its expenses, to come up with that number, and we can certainly provide that.
And you've given us that before, Commissioner, and I think I just saw it recently that shows how many parks make money, how many parks operate at a deficit, and actually some of those have gotten better in recent years as attendance has gone up. Representative Green.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. I have Cornish and Eklund, then we'll probably go to amendments. Cornish.
Real quickly, Mr. Chair, it's not a question but a comment on, it's very timely you asked that question about bikers and how they pay for the trail. Over 10 years ago in this room, I asked the same question. I'd been getting complaints from snowmobilers and ATVers about bikers not paying as much. And I asked Ms. Taylor this year to write a paper up on that, and she produced a very good paper specifically on that question, how trails are funded and comparison, what bikes and snowmobiles. And so she has that, Ms. Taylor has that available, and just within the last couple weeks she finished it, so it's timely information. And I would be very interested in looking at that for next year, how to put it together for this year. But even a fraction of a fee or some type of charge for each bike could make an enormous amount of difference to the revenue for our trails. So thank you.
And thank you, Representative Cornish, for mentioning that, and we'll get that out to members. To that point, Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chairman, members, this next biennial budget will be probably my last biennial budget, and so we're intending on looking very comprehensively at the elements of that, including, I think, things like fees. I mentioned the cross-country ski trail pass. But, Mr. Chairman, members, if the body would entertain us looking at a bicycle fee, we can surely come forward with a proposal or some ideas around that.
Thank you. Representative Eklund.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, thank you for being here. It's more of a comment than anything. Although I appreciate the cost shift for the going to the North Met legal costs, I think we need to be really concerned when we're working on trying to diversify the Iron Range economy with some different forest timber products industry that we're taking money away from the forest management account to operate legal costs for that the governor's already requested. So I'll comment further on the amendments, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, I think we'll move. Why don't we start? We'll start with the A. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got one. Ms. Ulick, I think all the money questions, unless there's questions direct, you are just on to testify. Landwehr, Commissioner Landwehr did just fine. Okay. I have a Catherine Hoffman. Ms. Hoffman, did you want to testify? You're on the list here. Why don't you come down? Thank you, Commissioner. You might want to stick around to see if you have anybody who wants to ask you questions, unless you need to go. Ms. Hoffman, please come forward. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and then go ahead with your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair McNamara, members of the committee, my name is Catherine Hoffman. I am the interim legal director with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And I'm here in particular to testify about the $5.4 million allocation for the North Met legal funds, and I believe that's at lines 3.13 through 3.22. You have to excuse me, I know that it's spring because my allergies are acting up. This allocation stems directly from the DNR's intention to permit the first sulfide mine in Minnesota, the PolyMet project. This is a project that will last for at most 20 years, 20 years of mining, 20 years of jobs, and some tax revenue. In exchange, the state must care for a polluted site for hundreds of years. This is a proposal that destroys almost 1,000 acres of wetlands, and likely many more thousands in the years to come, a proposal for which it remains entirely unclear whether the state will be protected from liability for centuries of pollution through some sort of damage deposit or financial assurance. So it should come as no surprise to anybody here that DNR and PCA are extremely worried about liability associated with this proposal. PCA in particular is likely to face liability on its on how or whether its Clean Water Act permit to PolyMet complies with the Federal Clean Water Act. Make no mistake, MCEA, my organization, supports the right of the state to defend itself against potential liability. The Attorney General has the right and the obligation to defend the state in the courts. But this allocation is not the way to do it. We have two major concerns. The first one is that this allocation is as large as it is because DNR and PCA are proposing to hire outside counsel. Outside counsel is significantly more expensive than using the Attorney General's office to defend the state. $1 million, for instance, gets you approximately one full-time person from an outside law firm. I don't know what the going salary is for a single attorney at the Attorney General's office, but I'm willing to bet you get a lot more than one employee there, one lawyer, for $1 million. So you've really driven up the cost by paying an outside counsel $400 an hour. Now, I know there's some notion that this is a specialized type of litigation, that, you know, we need a mining specialist. And I guess from my perspective, I don't see it. We have a history of mining in Minnesota, and the Attorney General's office has certainly handled mining litigation before. I mean, what are the issues here? Environmental review, NPDES permits under the Clean Water Act. That's familiar territory to the AG's office. Permit to mine. Now, the permit to mine statute for sulfide mining is different than the statute for taconite mining. So there are new issues here. But they're new to everybody because this is the first sulfide mine.
Ms. Hoffman, excuse me. Yes. You mentioned sulfide mining. I'm not aware that we're going to mine sulfide. Are you talking about precious metal like gold and copper?
Well, in particular, the PolyMet project proposes copper and nickel.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead with your testimony.
The term sulfide mining is a shortened version.
That's a term that I actually don't like, so if you want to keep testifying, why don't you refer to it as precious metal mining? Sorry, but I just think that's inappropriate to mislead people that are watching on TV to think that we're going to mine sulfide. Sulfide is a very important concern when we mine precious metals, and I think if we kind of take some of that... You know, I don't get where you're coming from when you do that because it just misleads people. I get people asking me, Denny, at the grocery store, why do we mine sulfide? That's something bad. So, go ahead.
Chair McNamara, members of the committee, the term sulfide mining is derived from a more general category of mining, often referred to as hard rock mining, and it is mining for precious metals and sulfide-bearing ore. So that's, and it covers a wide range of precious metals, and that's why we use that term is because sulfide is the unifying concept. But that said, because PolyMet is a copper-nickel mine, as they refer to it, I'm happy to use the term copper-nickel here today.
Go ahead. You want to finish up your testimony? Thanks.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair. My second concern is that the particular firm that was hired for this project is conflicted. It represents the National Mining Association. That's a national lobbyist organization, national lobbying organization for mining companies, of which PolyMet is a member. Now, the state has done a conflicts check. And when lawyers look at conflicts, there's a couple different ways to look at it. One way is a direct conflict, and this is the way most of us think about it. Lawyers are not ethically allowed to represent parties on both sides of a piece of litigation. So if two people are suing each other, you can't ethically represent them both. That seems fairly intuitive, and that's not the kind of conflict we're talking about. That's not present here. Rather, firms often use a more common form of conflict, which is called the positional conflict. And this is the notion that you have clients who may not be directly opposed to each other, but clients may feel strongly about the positions that you take in other pieces of litigation. So, for instance, here, the National Mining Association may not appreciate it if this firm comes out strongly in favor of a state who denies a permit to mine, because that's harmful to the mining industry as a whole. So there's a strong opportunity for a positional conflict here in the event that the state does something that is adverse to PolyMet. So either the state is signaling that they're never going to do anything adverse to PolyMet, or they're setting up some problem with a conflict for this law firm. Either way, it doesn't seem like a particularly good idea. The kind of firm that we want representing our state interests. For instance, the specific attorney who is advising the DNR in this matter also represented mining industries in the pebble mine in Alaska. In the pebble mine situation, the EPA used the Clean Water Act to come in and evaluate the resources in the area and determine that those resources were not available for mining because they were protected under the Clean Water Act. The attorney advising the DNR on PolyMet led the challenge, challenging the EPA's ability to enforce the Clean Water Act in that situation. This firm has also used questionable marketing tactics in order to attract mining potential mining clients. For instance, in an attempt to attract mining companies that do mountaintop mining in West Virginia, they tried to discredit a study that the state of West Virginia had conducted that connected mountaintop mining to some potential birth defects. And this firm actually suggested that inbreeding among people in West Virginia was responsible for these birth defects and not mining. This was an extremely questionable marketing tactic that ultimately resulted in some ethics complaints against some of these attorneys. This is the same firm that would be representing the state. So for these reasons, because it could be done much more efficiently by the Attorney General's office, and because this firm in particular is not the right firm for the job, we oppose this allocation.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Hoffman for coming. First off, Ms. Chairman, I thank you for correcting that. There's not a sulfide mine in the world. In my district, we like to call it non-ferrous mining, and it's a critical project to my district. My question is, you mentioned the 20-year lifespan of the project. Is that not, in fact, what the permit would be for, and there's most likely more ore there to last longer than 20 years, and that's just when the mine would have to re-permit after they're done?
Ms. Hoffman.
Chairman, members of the committee, the permit requested is for 20 years. There's nothing that obligates the mining operation to last for 20 years. Many mines actually close prior to their permitted lifespan when mineral prices drop. That's very common. It's also possible that the mine could last more than 20 years if additional resources are located. However, we should be very clear because the environmental review that's been conducted is only for a 20-year operation. So if PolyMet has the intent of operating longer than that, they should have applied for that and analyzed it as part of the environmental review.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we just need to be clear that the 20-year is for the mining permit, and it's common for mines to apply for permits and go through the process again to get their next permit for the next 20-year permit. And you look at our taconite plant mines and others that have been operating for well over those number of years, and they have to go through the same process.
Thank you. Thank you. See, no other questions. Anybody else? No. Thank you, Ms. Hoffman, for coming forward. Members, we might be able to make it through this, but I don't want to rush folks. Let's start. Representative Neuberger, I believe you have the A3. You want to walk us through the A3?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The A3 amendment.
You know what, Representative Neuberger, excuse me. The plan is we'll go A3, Representative Eklund, your A10. Then I have an A4. I think that's from the minority, an A6, the same, A5, and that's it. So there's not very many, so we should be pretty good. Representative Neuberger to the A3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move this amendment. It's the A3 amendment. It incorporates the language that was offered by Representative Jeff Backer. He's done a really good job here. The community of Herman, they've been asking for this for decades, and we heard the testimony here. This is certainly on the front burner, what he's trying to get done for those people that live there. It's got to do with the Big Lake there in Grant County, next to Herman, Minnesota. And as you can read in the amendment, they want to maintain the water elevation at 1,073 feet from May 1st to October 1st, and then draw it down to 1,072 feet before it freezes up. That's the amendment. It's a good project, and there we have it.
Representative Neuberger, I want to note that DNR is working. They're actually scheduling the meeting between the lake residents, the watershed, the county, and the hope is that this will be resolved before this bill is on the floor. But I think it's important that this seems to make sense, seems to have broad support
and DNR is working diligently to get an answer, but we felt it was important to accentuate this, and that's the reason for the amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we expressed concern when this was originally in front of us about putting this into statute, and I think we asked DNR if there was any precedent on putting lake levels into statute, and I think the answer was no. I see Mr. Meyer moving down the stairs, but and you know, I indicated it's good that the DNR and the residents are talking, but I still think this is a big step to put this into statute.
And Representative Hansen, it is a big step, and that's why I want to push this issue forward. This needs to be addressed. It seems like they have universal support to get it done, and I would agree with you. I would prefer to not put it in statute, but we need to push the issue forward. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Welcome. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and we do appreciate that concern. That is our major concern, going down the road of setting lake levels statutorily. Could take all of your committee time, practically every session. So we are working diligently with the Watershed District. There is a meeting that is now scheduled in a number of weeks. Trying to get everybody together was kind of challenging, but the doodle poll has closed, and I believe the meeting is May 6th. And we will keep, Mr. Chair, you informed as we move forward with that, and also Representative Becker.
Well, to that point, then, I want to make a point. I would anticipate this will be unresolved till conference committee, then, if the meeting's that far out. It isn't the intention to move this forward because it seemed to have mostly universal support at the local level, and we're hopeful we'll get it resolved. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to get on the record the specific, there's not a precedent for this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Commissioner Meyer, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, just, you know, you mentioned broad support. I would like a roll call on this.
Sure. Any more discussion on the A3? The clerk will take the roll. McNamara votes aye.
Fabian.
Aye.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Fenton.
Aye.
Fisher.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Hackbarth.
Aye.
Hancock.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Hausman.
No.
Heinzman.
Yes.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson.
Nay.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Purcell.
No.
Poppy.
No.
Rurick.
Aye.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglum.
Yes.
There being 13 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is adopted. Next, I have the A10. I believe that's Representative Eklund's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, although I have reservations about some of the transfers, the main thing in this amendment is on line 1.17 through 1.21. And there's money appropriated last year from this fund where the Iron Mining Association would match for research. And Ms. Johnson from the Iron Mining Association will come down and talk to that if it's okay.
Ms. Johnson, why don't you come forward, and then Commissioner Meyer, we'll probably need to get you both on the record. Representative Eklund.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A10 amendment.
Representative Eklund moves the A10. Representative Eklund, your question of Ms. Johnson, or... Did you hear it?
Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Kelsey Johnson. I'm president of the Iron Mining Association. And thank you, Representative Eklund, for bringing this amendment forward. This amendment will basically allow ongoing research to continue without the match. And we fully anticipate moving forward that the match will return in the years ahead. But this year we've been particularly hit hard, so I'll let...
Commissioner Meyer, do you support the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we do. This actually ties into the Mineral Management or Minerals Coordinating Committee extension that you have in your bill. This is standard rider language as we've had for many years, but due to the downturn in the industry, the groups are having trouble coming up with the match. There's also one other section that we would like to address, if possible, Mr. Chairman. The lines 1.26 to 1.27 is the same situation where the dollars are not available unless the match is present. So that 175 the first year, 175 the second year would need to match for us to spend the $251,000. This research is important to us. It's ongoing. It helps protect the environment and also makes the industry more efficient.
Commissioner Meyer, I think that got missed. That was supposed to have been included. Was that not the intention? Representative Eklund, do you know, I believe that when you and I discussed this amendment yesterday, when I was seeing on electronic form and what was highlighted, I thought both of those areas were on there. It wasn't? Okay. Representative Eklund.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I think we did miss it yesterday on that in our discussion.
Okay, I missed that. Can you come again, Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe we did miss that yesterday in our discussion because it surprised me this morning, too. So.
Okay, and it's your intention to include that?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, so, Ms. Taylor, could you read back Representative Eklund's oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment to the 810 amendment would read on line 1.26, strike everything after the period, and then strike line 1.27, 2.1, 2. And then on line 2.2, strike money for each $1 of state money, period.
Thank you. Does everyone have the Eklund orally modified amendment? It looks like everybody's nodding their heads. Ms. Taylor.
And then scratch the last instruction I said and strike 2.2, and then on line 2.3, strike may be cash or in kind, period.
Okay. Any discussion of the orally modified Eklund amendment? Representative Eklund, I'm going to take this opportunity to reiterate that when the taconite mines do return to great times, we're going to have a discussion about the $5 million of mesothelioma costs that Representative Rugavina and I worked on about 6-8 years ago that I still philosophically believe needs to be a discussion of who should pay that money back. So it's unrelated to this amendment, and I probably should have waited. But all those in favor of the Eklund A-10 is orally modified, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Thank you. Thank you both for coming forward. Thank you, Representative Eklund. Representative Hansen, who has the A-4?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have the A-4.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative Hansen.
The A-4 amendment, Mr. Chair, removes the Cold Spring appropriation and appropriation permit language. I think we've had this discussion for several years. I appreciate that the agency is talking with Cold Spring, but as was the case with the lake level, directing in law to amend the permit and issue it, I think is a concern. So I would, and I'd ask for a roll call on this.
You know what, Representative Hansen, I'm going to actually do, just in case, this one is probably going to, may take longer. It's the only other one. Well, this one, there's nobody here to speak to the other one. So
we can move on.
Well, no, I'll leave it. I was worried if there was somebody in the audience to speak to the next amendment, but I doubt there is. So sorry, members. I just wanted to clarify. Mr. Meckel, I think you probably should come forward and maybe talk a little bit about what this amendment does and if you see this amendment as helping us find resolution, or Commissioner Meyer, or whoever. Mr. Meckel, identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Jason Meckel, Department of Natural Resources. The language that you're looking at was what we had communicated to the City of Cold Spring and the brewery is we're continuing to try to find a resolution to the ongoing water supply issues. They asked us what we thought we could do with the existing permits. And we said that the 100 million gallon increase they were looking for, we could authorize that, but we wanted to see a $10 million reduction down by the creek. Therefore, we would not make the situation worse with the creek. But we also talked about the need to develop a very thorough and intensive groundwater model from the area based on the data we've been collecting and ongoing monitoring to really get a handle on what's the long-term picture for water supply availability near Cold Spring Creek. The five-year provision is just give the city enough opportunity to pursue what they need to do to get their new well field. They've taken the steps. They've done the test well. But they've got to secure the financing and other things to get that new well field up and running, and then the city would provide the future water to the brewery, and the brewery would be able to reduce the amount of water they're pulling that's nearby to the creek.
Well, Mr. Meckel, I commend you for working on a very tough issue and trying to find a solution. And we don't know if this is a long-term solution, but we're willing to give it a five-year window to see if it could work and potentially, if it does work and does make sense, protects the stream and allows the city to grow and the brewery potentially to grow at a second location within the city if they so desire. But at the same point, and then we fund this study so you can look at it and see what's happening. So I appreciate working with this, with the brewery and their new desire to have these energy drinks and such and to expand potentially within their own community. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meckel, separating out the study and the cost for that, do you have the authority under existing law to do what you're saying, or do you need a shall issue directive in statute?
Mr. Meckel.
Mr. Chair and members, we don't need any new authority to do this. It's within our authority, and we believe it's appropriate to do, to issue a permit. It's what we've communicated to the permittees of what our intention would be to help them meet their needs.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Meyer, is there any precedent for having a shall issue going into law on something like this?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, the only one that comes to mind is the Poplar River issue that we dealt with Lutzen. So there's not allowed us to continue a permit until we remove them off of the river source water, and we're still working through that issue. It should be probably completed now. So there is some precedent, I think, but it is, as Mr. Meckel said, the direction we're moving, and actually if you look at the study language on 12.4 to 12.10, the research, this is exactly the kind of work that was outlined in our groundwater threshold report that we discussed month ago, maybe in committee. That this is the direction we need to go to get the information that we can appropriate water at a local level. So we do appreciate the resources that are in the bill to do this, but we do have some concern about naming a particular company or a permit number in statute. So we'll need to try to talk about that if this moves forward.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would withdraw the roll call. I still am concerned about this. I would like, you know, this language is appearing in front of us on pretty short notice. Mr. Meckel, on lines 11.30 and 11.31, those wells, if you could provide some data on quantity and quality relating to those wells before it gets to the floor, that would be helpful. And still am a little skittish on this.
Mr. Meckel, if you could, why don't you include a map that shows where the brewery is, where their well is, where city well number three or the city well close to the river is, and then where the other two wells that four and five year would identify farther away from the river that could potentially allow more. And then don't we even know where farther out that new well field potentially could be? If you could identify that information. Representative Hansen's asking some good questions about this issue. Representative Hansen renews his motion for the A6 amendment. All those in favor? He withdrew the roll call. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Members, the last amendment I have is the A5. Is anybody going to offer the A5, Representative Hansen? I've got two more?
Yep. I would move the A6, and I would withdraw the A5 for now, I think.
I'm sorry.
I think you've seen my point before on the A5. But the A6, I would like to do that. And
I'd move the A6, and that is, the bill is primarily in the DNR's realm, but
yes.
I think in because of the need for transparency and that the other appropriation there relating to this legal bill would go to PCA, I think we should state that and not have the DNR have the discretion or have it be a little unclear as to where the money is going. So I would move the A6 amendment.
Discussion to the A6. All those in favor of the A6 say aye.
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 Opposed, nay?
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Discussion to the bill. Discussion to the bill. I renew my motion that House File 3890 be passed and sent on to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
Nay.
The bill is passed and on to Ways and Means. We have no more business before the committee. Members, I don't know how much more we are actually going to meet. We are in discussion potentially with the University of Minnesota and an informational meeting about the AIS Center and the Terrestrial Center. So they could potentially be here on that issue. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just put in a plug. I think hearing about the Aquatic Invasive Center, we were just notified that the executive director was retiring or leaving. And I think it would be important to talk about this.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that support. Members, we're adjourned.